We should probably get this underway. Thanks for coming. I know there's a lot of choices, and you chose this one, so I appreciate that. What we're going to talk about is advanced dashboarding. And what I like to do typically when I start these things is go through a little bit of lighthearted things in the beginning. So I want a little Vegas trivia for you. Did you know that in Nevada, there are more than 209,000 slot machines normally operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? That's a lot of slot machines. It's a lot of lost money, too. The average annual temperature here is 66 degrees. Like in Redmond, that's like an average summer day. It would take 288 years for one person to spend one night in every hotel room in Las Vegas. Frankly, I wouldn't want to spend one night in two-thirds of the rooms in Las Vegas. More than 110,000 marriage licenses are issued here every year, and I bet you that there are 109,000 divorces, give or take 1,000. And then the electric bill for the Luxor beam is $51 an hour, and the beam atop the edifice is made up of 29 individual lamps, each one costing $1,200, lasts about 2,000 hours. That's just a lot of light. It's no wonder they're a beacon of hope. And then Las Vegas means the meadows in Spanish. I threw that one in there because I thought it was interesting. All right, so let's actually get into the meat and potatoes of this thing. So this is the agenda. And what I want to do is basically show you how to create dashboards that are useful. If you've come in here and you think that I'm going to show you like a whole bunch of very beautiful, wow-type dashboards that sparkle and bling, I'm not going to do that. There are other places to find those things. You can go out on the internet and find those. There's lots of sessions here that show you super beautiful dashboards. And I have session recommendations if you want to see that. But what I do want to talk about instead is what's under the hood. So how do you actually build these things so that they work for you and that you can actually build great dashboards for your organization, not necessarily beautiful dashboards. You can let other people go do that stuff, but the hard part is like, where do I start? How do I actually get these great things, you know, into a state where they're consumable by people, not necessarily awesome looking? So that's kind of what I want to do today. So the first thing we're going to talk about is some of the philosophical changes that we made in 2013. What's new in Excel and Excel services? We're going to talk a little bit about the apps for Office. I know there's been quite a few sessions around the apps for Office pieces, but I don't know how many of those sessions have actually showed you how to get them into the galleries that you need to then put them onto a dashboard. And then, of course, last but not least, is what's new in Performance Point. I've talked to a lot of customers at the conference so far, and I've gotten a ton of questions about what's new in Performance Point, so I wanted to make sure I included some of that. So the Microsoft BI strategy is pretty simple, and we keep simplifying it every time. So it's built on SQL Server, Excel, and SharePoint. That's pretty much it. So you're going to create your data analysis layer with SQL Server, and it's going to provide a whole bunch of new capabilities that enhance the use of SharePoint and many of the services that run in SharePoint. And then you're going to add the tools layer, right? Oh, and I wanted to say the big piece about the SQL Server side is, you know, your analysis services is going to be the primary player there for most of the dashboarding, and that's kind of the way it's going to be into the future as well. Then, of course, you get to the tools layer, and in this case, that tool is going to be Excel. And with Excel, you get all that rich data connectivity, the ability to analyze data, the ability to house data models, and then you get the Power Pivot and Power View pieces. And what's significant about Power Pivot and Power View is I'm sure a lot of you have heard is that it's now baked into the Excel code base. They aren't things you need to go out and download anymore. They're not add-ons that you need to go find out on the web and then install after the fact. Power View is actually a button in the ribbon, and the Power Pivot tab in Excel is, is just there all the time because it's actually baked in. Not only that, but because Power Pivot is actually in Excel now, that means that X Velocity Engine is in the Excel code base. So one of the interesting things about that is even if you're casually working in pivot tables and pivot charts, whenever you go to process one of those pivot tables or pivot charts, a great majority of the time you're going to be leveraging that X Velocity Engine. You don't even know it anymore. One of the cool pieces about Excel and Excel services now in that tools layer is that the parity between the server side, Excel services, and Excel itself has become dramatically thinner. You'll notice if you look in Excel services now, you'll see it almost identically what you'll see in Excel, the client. And then you're going to have the sharing and consumption piece, right? And that's going to take place in SharePoint. And in some cases outside of SharePoint, when we talk about the Office Web App Server, which is now distinct from SharePoint, here you're going to continue to have the core services that you're used to, Excel services, Visio services, Performance Point services, and everything else. So that's pretty much how it stacks up. And one of the coolest parts of this, pun intended, model is that in the past, the analysis services, sort of SQL side of Microsoft, and then the Office BI side have kind of done their own thing, which is added to the bifurcation, I guess, of the different kinds of BI that you get with Microsoft. And it's been really cool to see in this last release for the 2013 stuff that, I mean, those two sides of the house have really come together and done some amazing things. They've really joined forces, and I think that that's going to continue into the future, so you'll see this consolidation of Microsoft BI going forward, which is totally awesome. So when you consider the platforms that I just talked about, this is kind of how they play out in the dashboarding space specifically. Well, ultimately, you're going to have Excel and Excel services, and they're going to play super upfront roles in BI, whether it's personal, self-service, or corporate. So take your personal BI. 9 times out of 10, you're going to somehow connect the data or import data into Excel, and somehow Excel is always going to play a piece of that. Honestly, in here, who hasn't used Excel just to look at data? That's all you wanted to do. You get a data set. It's a CSV file. It's an Excel file. It's some other file you don't recognize, but you know it contains data. The first thing you do is you either open it in Notepad or you open it in Excel. Excel always seems to play a role there. Let's say you open that data in Excel. You kind of play around with it a little bit. You maybe add a chart, a grid, whatever. And before you know it, that's sort of your self-service BI piece. You're looking at the data. You may or may not even keep it. Doesn't really matter, but that's the self-service piece that, or the personal BI that we're talking about, sorry. Then you get to the self-service piece. So now you're manifesting it somehow, you're kind of keeping it around other people, you've emailed it out, you're sharing it, it's getting legs, it's starting to take on some usability from other people, and so then you kind of go to publish it to SharePoint, and it might even at that point become data source in itself for some other workbook, which you can do now in 2013. That's where you get into that self-service space, right? And then, of course, IT all of a sudden gets notice of this thing. It's like really running rampant throughout the organization. They're using the Power Pivot dashboard, and they can see that it's being accessed a lot. And then they can kind of take it and pull it up maybe into analysis services, or whatever the case may be, however they want to manage that. And then you're sort of getting into that corporate BI space because now you can actually set down tools on top of it like Performance Point and Excel services. So that's kind of how it plays out. And you notice I added those little icons at the bottom. As I was making this slide, I thought, you know, there's this whole notion of cloud BI, and so I wanted to show how what was possible, at least to be upfront and transparent with everybody here, about what you could do with BI in the cloud today. So your personal BI, so the house, that's like your on-premise. And in the cloud, that's the cloud. So in the personal BI space, you're going to be able to just, you know, do whatever. It's just a workbook, right? You're just looking at it. Doesn't matter if it's in the cloud or on-premise. But when you're starting to get that self-service BI space, maybe you have a Power Pivot model inside your workbook. It gets a little sketchier in the cloud. Of course, you can do any of this stuff on premise, but in the cloud, you can pivot on that workbook. as long as it stays within the workbook. What you don't have today in the cloud is data refresh, really, unless you have a very customized solution. But data refresh is not quite there yet. And then, of course, corporate BI is definitely not available in the cloud today. So Performance Point Services is not in Office 365. And that's primarily because we're still working out the whole authentication piece. So another thing that you might hear about is like hybrid scenarios where your data is on-premise and your SharePoint farm is in the cloud or vice versa. There's still not a good way to join those two realms yet. So that's coming. I mean, every month it gets better, but it's a really hard problem to solve, and it's something that we're working on as I speak. Okay, so the reason we invested so much in Excel is because whenever you talk about it, so in Office 15 we poured a lot of resources into Excel. Whether you're importing data or whether you're just analyzing it, it's going to be a key part of your arsenal. And lo and behold, you know what? It's also now a first-class BI tool. So that's one of the things we made is that it's now really useful for a lot of the BI scenarios that you may not have used it for in the past. So let's take a look at the specifics about what's new in Excel. So I want to do a demo here, and we're going to take a look at some of the pieces in Excel that are now specific to BI itself. So we'll look at the quick analysis lens, the recommended pivot tables and the timeline slicer, the quick explore, and of course, everybody here I'm sure is well aware that Power View, like I said, is now in Excel, so I'll show you that as well. So let's see here. All right, so what I have here is just a data set that we created. It's kind of cool. It shows, it takes like every name that we know of, like a personal name, like Kevin, for example, and all the other names of the people in the audience here, and breaks it down by the number of those distinct names by state, by year. It's kind of cool. So this is the data set that we'll work with in this example. So what we're going to do is look at quick analysis first. And so this is what I'm talking about when I say this progression from personal to self-service. Let's say you just have a regular old table here. This is kind of what I was talking about earlier, where you crack open a data set. It's like, oh, look, a table. What am I going to do with that? I can't really analyze it. It's just a table full of numbers. So one of the things we added was this ability, when you right-click on any one of these cells that contain a number, you get like this quick analysis feature. And if you click on that, it understands what the table itself is and gives you some options about what you can do with that data. So you can hover over those and see really quickly some of the options that you have. So we have data bars and, of course, your color scale. There's even icon sets. And then you can look at charts. There's an example of what the chart would look like. If you just clicked on this, it would create the chart out of that automatically. You can do some totals, like sum, and there's more options over here, like percents and things like that. And of course, there's like the spark lines off of it. It's not really great data set for doing those things, but you kind of get the idea. But then the other piece is this tables, and what you can do is click on a table, and it will create a pivot table automatically off of everything that it finds in the table. So it only found the three columns, right? Gender and then the state ID. But it also knows that I have a Power Pivot model in the background that says, hey, I see some more tables there. You sure you don't want to explore that as well? So if you click on more tables, it'll go in and load the model and actually bring in everything that it found from the Power Pivot table as well. So if I click on this, now I have the dimensions and measures from my Power Pivot model that I can bring in and start working on a pivot table specifically. So if we were to take, gender, we could pull it into columns, and then we'll do like region, year, state. You can see this starting to take shape. You can do like count of name and values. Now we have like a pivot table. And this is just starting off with the data that I had in the model in that little table right on the first sheet there. And then what you can do is you can go in and you can click on just a cell and go to insert. And now we have this recommended. What you need to do is click on a on a cell and recommended charts, and it looks at that and says, oh, okay, these are some of the charts based on that pivot table that might be interesting to you. So you can kind of flip through each of these, and I'll show you a preview of what they look like. I'll do like a line chart. Now, because I have so much data, this looks a little unwieldy. You pretty much can't read it. So what we've added is some ways to slice this in different ways, and we've added a timeline slicer. This is kind of cool. I don't know if anyone has seen this yet, but it looks at for the date dimension. And now we have a timeline slicer for Excel. And this, you can start to see potential for a dashboard to start taking effect here. So now I have ways to look at it and slice it here. So this is kind of great. So if I click over here, and one of the cool things about this data set is I can throw out like these things to make it a little more useful. I wanted to show you how you can also, this timeline, you can do shift clicks. So let's say I did 1938, and I went up to, say, like 1955 and did a shift. Oops. It's dark up here. I hit control. Sorry. So now you can see the data start to take shape. And the reason I grabbed these dates specifically is because you can see, you know, by these years, look at what happens to the data here. This is where my parents were born, like right in here. Like this is 1945, right? Things are flat. War ends. Things take off. Kind of interesting data set. We just had Memorial Day. I thought I'd show that. And then the cool thing is, I can zip over here and I can open Power View, and you'll notice it's right inside Excel. And because I have a Power Pivot data model here, I can use Power View to analyze the data. So once that loads. And then the big thing for Power View is these guys added a map. So you can actually analyze the data against the map. And so what I did is throw in like my name just to kind of see where it's got really popular. My mom was visiting last week, and so I showed her this. I'm like, look, Mom, you named me like right when my name was probably the most popular thing that there is. And she goes, well, okay, you were born in California, so let's click on California. And she says, see, your name got popular again. It went down here a little bit, and then it got really exciting, you know, around the 1990s in California. And then I thought, well, what are some other popular names out there? Remember the show Roseanne? It's like, who would name their kid Roseanne? No offense if there's anybody Roseanne's in here, but like, it's like it got really popular here, and then it went down, and then didn't she like have that show right in here? It's like, ooh, yay, Roseanne. Let's name our kids Roseanne. And then Vanna, like, right, it's kind of a household name. Are there any Vannas in here? Yeah, I didn't think so, but there sure were in 1986 when Wheel of Fortune was popular, especially in California. So anyways, there's some of the fun things that you can do with Power View. So this is a section that I call kind of keeping the data together. And I wanted to call this out because you allow users to create their self-service assets, right? And then you make it really easy for IT to manage those if that's what the business chooses to do. So I want to mention a couple features that allow IT and power users to come together in this world of corporate and self-service BI. I mean, they feel like different realms, but they're not in 2013. So what I want to make clear, and I think that most people in the room will agree, is that self-service BI really does have its limits. In some ways, it kind of needs to be managed. And so when you're out on the floor and you're in the Microsoft booths and they're talking about managed self-service BI, this is what they're talking about. The data that you put into your visualizations and your dashboards is really the key to it all. The visualizations themselves don't mean anything if the data behind them is not good or accurate. So this is what you get when you click on the Inquire tab in Excel. And what it does is allows anyone, the spreadsheet manager, the IT guy, whoever, to track a spreadsheet's changes and to know which of those changes would affect the data that drives the organization's key business decisions. So although this feature doesn't really impact BI directly, it's not really a visualization, right? You can't slice it, you can't dice it, you can't drill on it, you can't really do anything, but it's important because it validates your BI data. And one of the reasons why dashboard consumers get skeptical of data that really isn't under IT control is because of that data validity question. So just a side story, before I came to Microsoft, I worked at a company where we built dashboards for the executive branch of the company, and we would go in there and show them these dashboards, and they looked really spectacular, but inevitably the question right away was, where did this data come from, and how do I know that we can trust it, right? And as soon as that question was asked, it just cast all kinds of doubt over the entire meeting, and it sort of just fizzled out from there. So it's really important that if the people who rely on the data know that it's, in fact, reliable data, that makes all the difference in the world. So this is the other feature that I wanted to mention, and it's pretty cool because Analysis Services has added a feature that joins self-service in the enterprise world also. So when the organization has developed a spreadsheet, the business side has developed a spreadsheet, and they've added the right formulas to it, and all makes sense financially, everything is perfect. And then they want to sort of capture that and hold on to it and give it strength and girth, I guess. One of the things, one of the new tools now that you get in SQL Server Data Tools, formerly known as BIDS, people have built cubes and BIDS, that's all changed now, it's called SQL Server Data Tools. They have a feature in there where you can point it at a PowerPivot workbook and essentially just suck up that PowerPivot workbook and enterprise ready it. And so it keeps all the integrity of everything that was created in the original workbook, but now brings it into an AS tabular model. So now it has, once you get it in AS, that's great because then you get like all the scale out and the granular refresh and the performance benefits of being on the server and not necessarily in the workbook anymore. So now I want to talk a little bit about what's new in Excel Services. So we talked about the Excel client quite a bit, so let's jump over to the server now. And like I said, we're working really hard to create parity between the server and the client. One of the reasons we're doing that is because the server can be updated so much more easily, especially if you're using it from Office 365. So you'll see that gap start to close more and more. One of the things we added, of course, is the field list and field well. So you saw that when I gave the demo of the Excel client. That field list and field well is now available in Excel Services as well. And that one feature alone actually, in my mind, makes this an awesome, the server side, an awesome analytic and exploration tool. Because now, from within Excel Services, I can start adding new dimensions and measures and start analyzing that without having to go into the client, like at all. So it's pretty great. And one of the things that some people I know in here might be thinking is, well, what happens if I use a SharePoint web part and put my Excel Services web part on my page? Am I going to get this field list and field well pop out in my SharePoint page? The answer is no. What we did was we added a property to the web part that allows you to suppress the field list and field well, so you can still have all the goodness of the Excel Services web part without having to look at that in SharePoint. Effective username, this is kind of a big one for me, and I think you'll agree. It's a feature that we added to Excel Services, which allows you to connect from Excel Services to Analysis Services as the user without having to set up delegation. So in other words, as long as you don't need to pass a user's identity all the way back to the original data source, you just need to kind of refresh out of Analysis Services itself, this is a great feature. So if I need to pass my identity from the browser to SharePoint to Excel Services to Analysis Services, I can do that with this feature without having to set up Kerberos. If I need to go back and refresh, pass identity all the way back to SQL Server to get the data back, then you'll still need to use delegation. But for the most part, and by and large, people just really need to go to Analysis Services to get their data back into the workbook. So now you can do that without having to set up Kerberos in most cases. And if you're really interested in that feature, we can talk about that some more. Automatic target app creation. So this is a feature that we added to Excel Services in the admin page. So you can create a secure store service target application without having to actually do that in the secure store. So this is really handy for administrators where you have one person administering the secure store service and you have someone else administering the Excel services service. Now you can create a secure store target application without actually having to go to the secure store to do that. Performance Point has had it from the beginning, but Excel services added it for this release. And then the BI server. This is a new piece that we need to account for, or that you need to account for when you're administering workbooks that contain Power Pivot models. So the BI server is essentially the specification of an AS server that will do all of the model processing whenever a user operation calls the model itself. So for an example, if I add a measure or a dimension to my model or to the workbook, to the pivot table or pivot chart, that processing needs to take place through the Power Pivot engine. So the Power Pivot engine in 2013 is now sitting on an analysis services server someplace. And so it will stream that Power Pivot model out to that server, do the processing, and then stream it back to the user. And the reason why it's now like this in 2013 is because the Power Pivot engine in 2010 actually ran inside of SharePoint. It doesn't do that in 2013. So you have to be able to process that model somehow. And the way you do that is we stream it to AS and then bring it back. And then the last piece that I wanted to mention here is we're calling, it stands for named object view, and it's kind of our second iteration of named object view. And it was published, so I don't know if you remember, when you publish name objects from a workbook in 2010, it looked a certain way, and it kind of had that Excel Chrome around it, and you just could see that one named object view, like the, just the chart you published or just the pivot table or whatever. That looks a lot different. In 2013, it's almost like a mini lightweight version dashboard in and of itself. And so we're going to take a look at what all these features are. So in this demo, I want to show you that named object view. We'll take a look at the field list and field well there, the effective username piece that I talked about, the automatic target app creation, and of course the BI server. Let's see here. So there's where we were. Let me close this guy. We'll open. So here we have just a regular workbook. It's got a couple pivot tables in it. This data, instead of the other one with all the names, is actually, it's, so you know how if you go out here in the hallways and stuff, there's the refrigerators full of soda and everything that you can take the drinks. So that's also, it exists like that on the Microsoft campus. You can go out and you can grab soda or whatever. So these are the metrics of that consumption and that usage by building and by year. So I thought this was also another fun data set to look at. You can see that most people actually drink soda more than anything. But I have a couple spreadsheets that show, like, building 16 is the SharePoint group, and building 36 is Office, and then building 35 is Analysis Services. And I was, like, starting to compare, like, coffee consumption between those two buildings just before a major release. And, like, definitely goes up right before. So, yeah, here we go. And I can... You know, this works, I can process it, and that's fine. It's going to go out, it's running the timeline operation, it's going to go out and query the model and then return the results. So there you go. And did you notice the animation there? So this is one of the things we added to the client. If you look at the chart, it kind of animation. So it makes it a little easier to see what you changed if it animates accordingly. So there you go, it's working. But then if I go over to here, and I open the same thing through Excel services. This is that named object view I was talking about. It's a lot different than it was in 2010. So I can actually browse through the named objects by actually clicking on them. and going through. And then if I wanted to, I could hide this. You'll notice also that I have the field list and field well now in named object view as well. So if I wanted to, I could change values by clicking on this, and it will actually go out and query it and bring it back. So that's all pretty cool. The timeline works because I published all that as an object as well. And so now my timeline works perfectly fine. But the key thing that I wanted to show you here is, so you have all these features there, but let me show you the effective username stuff that I was talking about. So if I go back into here, I go under data, I go to my connections, my properties. This is buried way down there, by the way. I'm working on that problem. You can see that I'm running as myself, right? So in that named object view, when I was doing the slicing the timeline and I was switching out stuff in the field list, I was doing that as me, not as an unintended account. And you can see, because I have the authenticated user account set, if I was using it as an unintended account, I would choose one of these, right? And it would go over to the secure store in SharePoint and impersonate me, right? But that's not the case. You can see I'm using the authenticated user's account. So if I come back over here onto the server, excuse me while I log in. And I go to my Excel Services service application under global settings. Way down here at the bottom is this. Use the effective username property, and that's the piece that I was talking about. So if I uncheck that, click OK, and then pop back over here and refresh this guy, and now I do something that tries to process the model, it should fail. Yeah, it does, because it's like, there's no delegation set up here. I cannot pass your username back to Analysis Services, so it fails. And so that's what I was talking about with the effective username piece. It allows you to pass it all the way back. And the way it works is, let's set that back, and I'll show you. So the effective username is a property that gets set on the connection string when it makes the query to Analysis Services. And on that property is the value of my username. So what it does is it logs into Analysis Services as the process identity of Excel Services, and then it passes the value from the effective username property to Analysis Services, and then Analysis Services will process the model based on that user that it gets. So, for example, if we go over here and start a profile trace, and go back over here. Oh, I forgot. Reset this. Did I set the username back? Yeah, there we go. Come back over here. You can see that all these queries, the actual MDX queries, was made as the process identity running in SharePoint, even though in Excel client you saw that it was set to the per user identity, which was me. That just, what you do is you set up the process identity on the Analysis Services cube as an administrator, and so then that's how the processing works, but it gets the user on the property gets passed. So that's how that feature works. And then while we're in here, I wanted to show you where you set the automatic target app creation. So at the bottom, this all section right here is brand new. So you can create a brand new unintended service account through here. So if I fill this in, you will see the result of this get populated in the Secure Store service as a new target app. And then lastly, this is the new BI server that I was talking about. So if you plan on processing Power Pivot models through Excel Services, you do have to set this, and you have to enter a valid AS server that can process that model before it can stream and do any processing. So you can add, this is just a server that we have in-house that will do that processing for testing purposes, but if I add more than one server here, it will just use those servers as load balancing. That's why you can add more than one. All right, let me clean this up real quick. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about apps for Office. So what are they? They do a whole bunch of things, but I'm talking about them in the context of the actual dashboarding. It's something that wasn't possible with versions prior to Office 2013. And they're built on technologies that you pretty much already know and love, like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. That's the trifecta that everybody's talking about right now. And so you can create them yourselves, or you can buy them from the Office Store, or you can take any one of the free versions that are already out there and play around with them. And one of the cool things about the free versions is there's a whole bunch out there that take really common data sets. And again, I'm trying to give you ways that you can go out there today, like literally right after this session, and go play around with these things. They take common data sets like geography or date or something like that, and then you can plug them in and start getting a sense of how they work. You'll have to go in there and take a look at them. But the reason I made this slide like I did is because I wanted to show you the different ways that you could use them. So imagine this slide is a canvas for an Office client. Like in this case, it is. It's Excel. And on the left area, you have the content area, so you can put some apps over there, and then on the right, you have the task pane, and then you can put other apps over there. And so they serve different functions, and you can leverage them to do different things in your dashboard. The exception is Outlook. Has anybody played with Apps for Office for Outlook? It's a little different. It uses what are called contextual apps. So an example might be, let's say I had an email message with a YouTube link in it or something like that, or a LinkedIn link or whatever. There are apps for Office out there that actually plug into that email message that when you click on it, it scans your email message and then suggests and does cool things. Like, so if it sees the YouTube, it might start playing it within the app for Office right there, right in your email message. Or it might be able to show you just the relevant parts of the LinkedIn message or the LinkedIn link that you're looking at in your message. There's another one, I think, by default, in the new Outlook client that if you have an email message and in that message it's talking, you know, it says like, oh, hey, we should meet on Thursday, for example, the app will scan that message and then come back to you and say, hey, we think we found maybe a potential meeting. Do you want us to start scheduling that or bring up the calendar so you can schedule a Thursday meeting, stuff like that. It'll read it and try to help you do things faster. That's what's called a contextual app for Outlook. My remote's a little slow. So these are the different kinds of apps that you can add to the client. So Word and Project and Excel all have apps that can go in the task pane, PowerPoint, and then there are only some that you can put in the task pane itself. And pretty much all the 2013 clients have that notion of a task pane, right? Word has it, Excel, PowerPoint, Project, whatever. So where do they live? There are three areas, pretty much, that you can load apps for Office from. You can load them from file shares, you can load them from the Office Marketplace, or you can set up corporate catalogs. And corporate catalogs exist in SharePoint, and just think of those as like internal corporate marketplaces, but they exist in SharePoint. So employees can go and get custom designed apps for Office that maybe just pertain to the organization. To end users, there's really no difference. They add them to the client in exactly the same way. Once there, though, they transfer to the web app. So if you add an app in your client and then you publish it to SharePoint and look at it, it works exactly the same in the client or on the server. So let me show you in a second how you actually create them. But this is basically how they work. With the exception of the Outlook app, which we already talked about, there are basically iframes. They either exist in the content area or the task pane. Again, just those two locations with the exception of Outlook. And the way the client interacts with the app that you place on it is through a set of JavaScript libraries. And those libraries are installed when you install the Office client. When the app runs, it calls a manifest. And the manifest is just basically an XML file that defines a whole bunch of cool properties about the app itself, like where's the HTML page that display is actually coming from? What size do I display inside the client? Where's the little icon show up? Where's the link to that? Is it a task pane or is it a content? So that's what gets defined in the manifest. So between the JavaScript libraries, the Office application itself, and the manifest, and the web page that shows in the client, you pretty much have your app for Office. So the reason I wanted to show you this slide is just to show you like the fidelity. It's almost identical between the server and the client. And you really don't know which of those is server and client unless you look a little closely. You can see that one of them has a browser bar. You know that that's the server and the other one's just the client. So the parity is pretty great. So making an app for Office. So how do you make one of these and then how do you deploy it? So let's take a look at how to do that. So if I open up Excel, I'm going to close this. This, by the way, I don't know if you've seen this. This is the election tracker that was part of one of the apps for Office. In fact, I can just show you this real quick. This is an app for Office, and it was created to track election results real time. Did anybody see this during the election? This is actually how I followed what the election was doing. It's just a map that shows you. And so this is a web page that's running inside the client app. And one of the cool things about this is you can slide this to see like the strength of the candidate in each one of those states, depending on how strong the color is. It's kind of cool. Let me start with an empty Excel workbook. And the way you add the app is you just go into Insert, and you'll see this Apps for Office button right here. If I click on it, these are the apps that you already use. So if you've already used the app, it stays inside the client and allows you to reference it again very quickly. So here's an example, just this calendar. So when you click on a date, it actually writes that to one of the cell values in Excel. And this is where the JavaScript is actually interacting with the client to make that happen. I can go in. This is a content app. This dictionary one. These are all free, by the way, out there today. Loads the task pane app. And so if I went to a cell out here and I typed Las Vegas, and then I come back on there, give it focus, now you can see interact with the app itself. And this is sort of the point of the app for Office for Excel is you can interact with the spreadsheet, does something to the app that's on the spreadsheet. So there you go, that's how that works. So let's say now you have these here. How do you create one? Well, there's a couple ways that you can create one of these things. You can create it in Visual Studio, or you can create it using the NAPA tools in Office 365. Has anybody heard of the NAPA tools? A couple people? Okay. So this is how you do that. I have a Office 365 site, so we don't have to load it. When you sign up for a free site or a paid one, you get this Office 365 development tools piece. And I've just created a quick Excel client app. You can do this right out of the box. So there's two ways to do this. If I add a new project, you can see that I can create an app for SharePoint, but these are the ones that are pertinent to what I'm talking about. So the task pane for Office, the content app for Excel, the mail app for Office. So this is the contextual one that I was talking about. By the same token, over here in Visual Studio, when you create a new project, you get this Office Apps SharePoint, and you can create either one for Office or one for SharePoint. And when you click on it, the first thing it asks you is, do you want to make it for Excel, Word, Project, all three, whatever. So this is how you create it. And once you do, it will create everything you need to kind of extend that and make it a lot better. So let's see. Now, this is the cool thing about the NAPA tools. So if I click this, it just gives me basically a quick and easy shell project. So this is the HTML page that will display in the client. The content up here just gives me a couple of CSS style sheets that I can make it look different. And this is just all out of the box, right? This is really cool. The app icon, this is the app when you go to select it. Remember we selected and you saw that grid of icons? This is the little icon that would appear next to that. You could specify it. And then, of course, these are the scripts itself. So this is just basically a shell script that provides that interface between the app and the client. And then if I go and look at the properties, what I get is a view of the manifest file. So this is just the manifest file manifested. In a GUI sense, so I could see, you know, here's the size and everything in the description, the name. And then you can choose where to run this thing. Do you want to try it out in the client, or do you want to try it out in the web app? The way you do that is you just click run, and what it'll do is take this, it will upload it. If you've already run it before, it'll uninstall the previous version. Takes a second. And then it'll go ahead and deploy that and then launch the browser that will actually then go ahead and render it. Seems to take a little while, so we'll do other stuff and then come back to that in a second. When you go and do that, so once you're done here, you can go ahead and run this, and it will deploy to Visual Studio. And once you're in Visual Studio, we create just a new solution here. Well, what I was going to show you is you can actually deploy what you saw in the NAPA tools, you can actually deploy straight to Visual Studio. So when you click Deploy Projects from the NAPA tool web app, this is what you get. It will give you everything you see here. So here's the app manifest that I was talking about. You can add a description. This is where the icon lives. This, the capability is the workbook itself. So if it was something else, like an Outlook app, it would say something different here. This is where the HTML lives. This is the size and everything of the app that runs inside the client. Let's come back over here and see if this guy is done. Oh my gosh. All right, forget it. From here, you can actually test it out, but before you do so, because it uses uses the browser to do that, you have to actually go in. And disable script debugging. So then if you come back over here, you can try this out. What I'll do is launch Excel, throw this on the page, and work. So this is what you get out of the box, and it's pretty cool. So if I have something here, click on this, I can get it, and it pulls it back in. So it gives you the basic code just to kind of get started, and then you're free to go from there. It's kind of cool. So now that you've created one of these, like, how do you get it inside that catalog in Excel? So that your users can actually pull it out and look at it. There's a couple ways to do that. Remember I said you can add it to a file share, or you can add it to a catalog inside of SharePoint. So if I go to close Excel here, file share, I have one out here. some demo content. So here I have a manifest file out here. And you can see, just to distinguish this, I say in the description, hey, I'm coming from a file share. Right? So I would just grab this and then pay attention because this gets a little, it gets buried here. So when you launch Excel and start a new workbook, you go under File, Options, you go to Trust Center Settings, Trusted App Catalogs, and add it here. Add catalog. It knows it's a network share. Say, yeah, I want to show this in the menu. Click OK. You have to restart Excel. But then when I come over here and insert it, now you'll see I have a shared folder. And if I hover over that, you can see that it picked up the manifest. That's how you get it into a catalog here. Now you say, okay, that's great, but I don't want to put these in file share. I actually want to put them on SharePoint. How do I do that? So I come over to SharePoint. Inside SharePoint Central Admin, on the left-hand side of the menu, there's a menu item that says Apps. If you click on that Apps, it creates an app catalog for you. What I did is just create a quick link to that app catalog so we wouldn't have to do it all here. But the app catalog it creates is this, one of the items is Apps for Office. And you just, this is just a site, right? It's nothing more than a list or a document list that I just pull in my manifest to, and it's tailored so it automatically understands the structure of that manifest. So once I do that, I can click on here, and if I edit this manifest, when it opens in Notepad, if it ever opens in Notepad. Anyway, what I did there was you can have, I added the description here so you could say, hey, this is coming from SharePoint. So let's see if we, yeah, say I'm coming from SharePoint, right? So when I save that back, I just grab this catalog name. And you just need the URL. Straight up to there. And then you can come back over to Excel. Paste it in. Add the catalog and it says, hey, I know I'm from SharePoint now. So you click that, click OK. Restart Excel. And so now you get my organization. And so if I hover over that, you can see I'm coming from SharePoint. That's how you get it into the catalog so that you can then have your users consume that. Yeah? Yes, yes. The question is, can you do that with group policy? Okay, so that's pretty much how the Apps for Office works. And so now you're saying, okay, that's great. But really what I want to do is show me something that actually looks more like a dashboard. So if I go back over to our VendMax data. So here's an example of a bubble chart, and this is the actual coffee usage by building. Building 36 and building 34 definitely have more usage than anything else. And this is actually just built internally, kind of fun. Here's a Bing map that shows the location of the different buildings, and then the quantity by building, so you can easily look at that and see, you know, different ways to examine that. It's kind of fun. I think I might have one over here, too. Yeah, so this is just one where you saw the visualization of the map that was in the election stuff. Same thing goes here. So if I change my region from west to south, then I can have my gauge change and I can have my map change, or I can go, you know, back to west, whatever. So this is just an example of just something you could do to create a dashboard. And again, when you publish this to SharePoint, you open up in the server, you get the exact same functionality for your users. So what do you think? Pretty cool, huh? All right. All right, let's get into performance point. So this is the pretty cool thing about that we've done for a performance point. So themes. We heard a lot of customer feedback about spicing up the look of performance point. This is where we took that to heart. So when you create a performance point dashboard and you have your SharePoint site themed, we're going to allow the theme in SharePoint to bleed through into performance points. So all your dashboards are going to look exactly like the theme. So it'll bleed through your analytic charts and your analytic grids and your scorecards and actually look really nice. The BI Center, this is a site template. Remember the BI Center site template? It was kind of hard to find where to launch the dashboard designer. There was that button that was buried down a couple levels, and we have added, it was actually my design to bring the dashboard designer button up into the SharePoint ribbon. So now that's how you launch dashboard designer. It's a lot easier to find. Filter enhancements. We made several improvements to the way that you use filters. For example, we'll throttle the number of items returned in a filter. So if you have a user that created a dashboard with, like, you know, 100,000 aspects of their dimension, like levels of their dimension, they put it in a filter, and then you go to drop that filter down, it's just, I mean, that thing's just going to spin forever, right? So now we take that and we throttle it so you can actually page through the results of the filter. Not only that, but another enhancement we made was if you had checked some level way down in your hierarchy in your filter, and then you went to go try and find what you had checked, there's no way to do that, right? It was just this litany of things inside your filter. We've taken the liberty to now bold each parent level of the hierarchy that contains some checked item underneath it, so it's a lot easier to find and navigate through your filters. Filter search. You can now search inside your filters. So that's kind of nice. If you have a big hierarchy in there and you want to find one little tidbit to filter on, now you can search inside the filter and quickly find what you're looking for. The effective username, the same thing that I demonstrated in Excel and Excel services, is also available in Performance Point. So now you can use quasi-delegation in Performance Point without having to set up Kerberos. Custom target applications, this was like a really big deal. So in Performance Point 2010, when you configured the PPS service application page and you configured that target application for the secure store, that was the one that got created in the secure store was the only one that Performance Point could use. And not only that, but nothing else could use it either. So now you have this like separation of privileges in your dashboard between Performance Point, like in Excel and Excel services, for example. Now, the cool thing is you can share target applications. This is like, we heard this over and over from really big companies that I want to be able to set the same permissions on my dashboard that I do in my Excel services stuff. And so now you can share target applications between Excel services and Performance Point. And then the coup de grace to all that is not only can you do it at the service level, but you can also specify that in Dashboard Designer. So if you know of a target application, that's also used by Excel services, you can specify that same one in Dashboard Designer. So per data source in Dashboard Designer, now I can have different authentication. So that was a really big one. Server-side migration, this is my personal favorite, and I'll demo it here in a second, but one of the things that kind of kept Performance Point from being really robust in terms of the enterprise is the fact that you couldn't really move your dashboards very well from dev to test to prod. The way you did that, or the way I told people to do it in the past, is, hey, just create it in prod, but don't give anybody permissions to it, and no one will know it's there. Or, you know, you'll move that DDWX file around and, like, import it to where you wanted it to be, and it was just kind of a mess. Now you can legitimately move an entire dashboard from server to server or site collection to site collection. I can even move one KPI from site collection to server to server, all on the server side. I don't even have to go into Dashboard Designer to do it anymore. I can do it from the SharePoint ribbon And it's completely scriptable. So if you are an IT person and you need to move dashboards to different environments on a schedule, that's totally scriptable now through PowerShell. And then the last piece that I want to talk about real quick is the Dashboard Designer authentication. In 2010, Dashboard Designer only knew how to save objects back to SharePoint as the Windows identity of the user who launched Dashboard Designer. That's not really the case anymore. So if you have your SharePoint farm to set up like forms-based authentication and you launch Dashboard Designer, now it will launch as the person that you logged into as SharePoint under forms-based authentication. So that's kind of nice. And you can save things back to SharePoint as that context. The other thing is if you have in SharePoint, you set up your environment to use multi-mode or mixed-mode authentication, Dashboard Designer now will honor that and allow you to select what kind of authentication method you want to use when you save your objects back to SharePoint. So that's all pretty cool, right? I thought it was. So let's take a look at some of those features. So the first thing I want to show you is the filter search. So if I go back over to here, go to my dashboards, show you the filter. So here's our soda and juice data set. If I click on this, you can see I have a bunch of members here, nothing too crazy, but enough to show the fact that you can filter. So let's say I did Coke, and it automatically auto-completes for me on that. I click search. Now it's going to find a whole bunch of Coke, right, because it's buried several places within each of those buildings. And so now you can say, hey, we're only going to show you the first 100 results. If you want to get all of them, be my guest, but it could take a while. Another thing I might want to do is I just might want to search on building like 16, for example. So then it would bring back everything it found for 16. I could click on it and click OK. And then, you know, my dashboard would filter based or would re-render based on those two things. So building 23 or 123 and building 16. And so here's what I was talking about with the levels. So let's say I was checking Pepsi way down here. Now we bold these things so that if you come back in, now you know something has been selected inside of building 16. Just a nice little enhancement that people asked for when they had large sets of filter members. Let's see, before we get there, in Dashboard Designer, so I wanted to show you the way you could add like non-PPS target applications. So here's some data sources. Like click on this. Now you can see that right here, I can use a target application ID from the secure store that's shared. So I don't have to use this unattended service account anymore. I can use whichever one I want to as long as I know what that is. One of the things I really wanted to do here was make this a drop-down to the available target applications you had permission to get to. I didn't quite get to that. Sorry. I'll work on it next time. Then let's go back over to the server because I want to show you. So if I go into Performance Point, so here's where I can use a separate target application ID at the service level. So every service call would use that target application ID. And here's the effective username piece that I was talking about before. So right now, I have this guy called Dozer in here. And so if I come back over to here, I look at the data source for this, you see I use a stored account called Dozer. Just to prove my point, if I click on current user, I have just an MDX statement that returns the user actually making the call. you can see that it says Dozer. So if I go back over here, I use the effective username, I click OK, and I come back over to this guy and choose per user identity, and save this thing back to SharePoint. Now I click on current user. It takes a second to render because it has to go log out and log in and do all that stuff, but it should show as me, because I'm the user down here making the call. Oh, by the way, this is another feature we added. We show who the user is that's logged into Dashboard Designer and where they're connected. Just a little more information than we provided in 2010. So there. So just to prove that it works, you can see that per user authentication now works with just one checkbox, more or less. The other thing I want to show you is, you know how Excel Services was able to use ODC files to set up saved connection states? Well, now in Performance Point, you can actually use BISM files. Is anybody here familiar with BISM files? It's an analysis services concept that acts a little bit like an ODC file. You create it in SharePoint and add them to a document library. So this is sort of the way that we can use ODC files, because they refer, the BISM file refers to a server someplace else, and so now you can use those as data sources in Dashboard Designer. And that's kind of nice. So if I come back over to SharePoint, crazy slow today. So this internet sales tabular is a BISM file. I can come over here and edit my BI semantic file connection. You can see that it's referring to a workbook someplace else, or I could specify a database or server name. So effectively, now that I'm referring to a workbook someplace else, and I come back over here to Performance Point, I can use that as a data source by using this BISM file. So if I test the connection, it's going to go to the workbook as a data source. The data source will then point back to analysis services someplace, and now I have a successful connection. So I can use basically ODC files for Performance Point, which is kind of cool. So now let me demo the server-side migration piece real quick, because I think that's kind of a cool thing. So if I go into my PPS dashboards and I go on my theme dashboard, and this is also show you themes, but here I have a dashboard. And so it's nothing special. It's just got a grid on it. It's got a scorecard, and it's got a chart. But there they are. They render. There's a scorecard. It's cool. Whatever. It's a regular dashboard. Come back over here. If I click on this and I come back over here to Performance Point, I can export the content from that dashboard. And so what we do is we look at the dashboard. We look at all the dependencies that are part of that dashboard. And we look to see where everything is. And we export it to this CMP file. So I have 12 dependencies on that dashboard. And I can look to see what those items are. So I have the chart, the filter, the grid, each KPI, the dashboard itself. I even have the two data sources that are involved in making that dashboard. And here's my favorite part. I can click on, let's say I had an Excel Services web part on that dashboard. Excel Services is just the front end to a workbook that's sitting back on the server, right? Let's say my dashboard, I needed to bring that workbook over as part of my migration. I can click Add Items, and what it's going to do is open up the asset picker in SharePoint and allow me to specify the workbook that's part of my Excel Services, part of my dashboard. So now it's going to go through, and lo and behold, now I have 13 items. And I can come down here and say, yep, there's the workbook that's part of my dashboard. If I click Export, it's going to package all those up into what we call a CMP file, which is actually just a native SharePoint file type. say, okay, there it is, it's exported. I've saved it to PPS dashboards. I'll just keep that name. So if I come back over to PPS dashboards, I'll see my file there. And so what I can do at this point is I can now take this file and just move it around. So if I click on it, I'll just save it to my downloads. There it is. I have a different one. And then I come over and say, okay, I want to bring that into some other thing on some other server. So I'll come over to this other server that I have. Here it is. It's themed. It's pretty and everything. I can come over to dashboards, the document library. And what I'm going to do is I'll take that CMP file and actually import it here, because you have to extract one of those CMP files from a document library. So if I go to downloads, grab this guy, so what it's going to do is it's going to unload that, extract that CMP file. When I go to import it, it's not a web part page, it's a document. Okay, so there it is. Now what I'll do is come back over to Performance Point, and I will import that content. So open SharePoint, it'll open the asset picker again. You ever get tired of these working on it messages? So there it is. And this is just standard SharePoint stuff, right? I'm just importing this thing. But the key here is now we're going to analyze it. So we're going to open up that CMP package, look at all the stuff that's there, and then allow you to make some decisions. So in my original dashboard, this was in PPS, the dashboard was in PPS dashboards. That Excel file was in shared documents. The list was in PPS content list. So we come over here, we're like, I don't have those things on this other server. I need you to map that for me. So, okay, I'll map that for you. So shared documents is now documents. Content list is on the other server as Performance Point content. Data sources is now data connections. Now here's the cool thing. It brought the PPS data connections, right? But what if those data connections in PPS were referring to development analysis services servers? If I bring these data connections over and I launch the dashboard in production, now it's still pointing back to analysis services development data sources. That's not cool. I don't want that. So what we've done is you can map it to a new data source. So you can say, oh, I have these PPS data sources on my target server that already point to production analysis services, so I can remap those as part of the import process. Or you can just leave it the same. It doesn't really matter. The other thing is that I can change the master page destination on the fly. So you can do that as well here. So I want this to use this master page for my production import. And of course, we saw 13 before, and there's 13 again. So now when all this is done, you just go ahead and import it. And this is what we do, is we take each of those assets in the dashboard, we crack it open, we look to see, yep, this came from a different location, so we're going to go ahead and rewrite the new location for each of those assets. So when we're in PPS content list, now we might be in Performance Point content list or whatever. If the reference has to change, we're going to go ahead and change all those references as part of the import. So that's what this process is doing now. It's opening each one of those, looking at it, remapping it, and then saving it back to SharePoint. By the way, do you like this theme? This is the theme I picked here. Yeah, so if you have too many assets, then pay attention to that part right there. So there you are, 13 items imported completely. So you click OK, and there it is. So I'll click on it, and it should open the dashboard. Yay, now you can see that this is what I was talking about, how we allow those assets to kind of bleed through based on the theme that you chose. So there we moved a Performance Point dashboard without ever going into Dashboard Designer, grabbed all the assets that belonged to it, the Excel workbooks included, and moved them someplace else. Now, I didn't have to grab the whole dashboard. I could have grabbed one KPI. I could have grabbed just the Excel workbook. The cool thing about this is that you can use it for any of your SharePoint assets. It doesn't have to be for a Performance Point, but in this case, it was. Yay! So then just real quick. We can talk about this after the session if you want, because I know we're out of time. But I just want to show this is the dashboard story that you have in the cloud. I talked about it a little bit earlier. You're sort of self-contained here. You get the flow would sort of go like this, where you have your client, you connect to SharePoint, you connect to your Power Pivot model. The Power Pivot model gets streamed to BI Azure. That gets streamed back after you get the identify the user through Azure Active Directory and then back to the client. That's dashboarding in the cloud today. It's getting better every month, but this is the story. If you want to come talk to me more about this, I encourage you to do so. So again, this is the stack. This is kind of how it works. You have Excel, SQL Server, SharePoint, and you are off and running. Some resources, so when you download the deck after the session, you can get all this stuff that I talked about. I provide links to somewhere you can go download these things. And then these are the past sessions that you might want to hit after today. This is what you saw. This is what already occurred, and this is what's coming up. So tomorrow, well, pretty much all the sessions that are relevant happen tomorrow. So I encourage you to go to those as well. So that's it. Fill out your evaluations. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.